but the gain is accompanied by fear, anxiety, and torture of mind and body. Whoever says this must perforce admit that sacrilege, though it be an evil because it works much evil, is yet partly good because it accomplishes a certain amount of good. What can be more monstrous than this? We have, to be sure, actually convinced the world that sacrilege, theft, and adultery are to be regarded as among the goods. How many men there are who do not blush at theft? How many who boast of having committed adultery? For petty sacrilege is punished, but sacrilege on a grand scale is honored by a triumphal procession. Besides, sacrilege, if it is wholly good in some respect, will also be honorable and will be called right conduct, for it is conduct which concerns ourselves. But no human being, on serious consideration, admits this idea. Therefore, goods cannot spring from evil, for if, as you object, sacrilege is an evil for the single reason that it brings on much evil, if you but absolve sacrilege of its punishment and pledge it immunity, sacrilege will be wholly good. And yet, the worst punishment for crime lies in the crime itself. You are mistaken, I maintain, if you propose to reserve your punishments for the hangman or the prison. The crime is punished immediately after it is committed, nay, rather at the moment when it is committed. Hence, good does not spring from evil, any more than figs grow from olive trees. Things which grow correspond to their seed, and goods cannot depart from their class. As that which is honorable does not grow from that which is base, so neither does good grow from evil. For the honorable and the good are identical. Certain of our school oppose this statement as follows. Let us suppose that money taken from any source whatsoever is a good. Even though it is taken by an act of sacrilege, the money does not on that account derive its origin from sacrilege. You may get my meaning through the following illustration. In the same jar there is a piece of gold and there is a serpent. If you take the gold from the jar, it is not just because the serpent is there too, I say, that the jar yields me the gold, because it contains the serpent as well, but it yields the gold in spite of containing the serpent also. Similarly, gain results from sacrilege, not just because sacrilege is a base and accursed act, but because it contains gain also. As the serpent in the jar is an evil, and not the gold which lies there beside the serpent, so in an act of sacrilege, it is the crime, not the profit, that is evil. But I differ from these men, for the conditions in each case are not at all the same. In the one instance, I can take the gold without the serpent. In the other, I cannot make the profit without committing the sacrilege. The gain, in the latter case, does not lie side by side with the crime, it is blended with the crime. That which, while we are desiring to attain it, involves us in many evils, is not a good. But while we are desiring to attain riches, we become involved in many evils. Therefore, riches are not a good. Your first premise, they say, contains two meanings. One is, we become involved in many evils while we are desiring to attain riches. But we also become involved in many evils while we are desiring to attain virtue. One man, while traveling in order to prosecute his studies, suffers shipwreck, and another is taken captive. The second meaning is as follows, that through which we become involved in evils is not a good, and it will not logically follow from our proposition that we become involved in evils through riches or through pleasure. Otherwise, if it is through riches that we become involved in many evils, riches are not only not a good, but they are positively an evil. You, however, maintain merely that they are not a good. Moreover, the objector says, you grant that riches are of some use. You reckon them among the advantages. And yet, on this basis, they cannot even be an advantage. For it is through the pursuit of riches that we suffer much disadvantage. Certain men answer this objection as follows. You are mistaken if you ascribe disadvantages to riches. Riches injure no one. It is a man's own folly or his neighbor's wickedness that harms him in each case. Just as a sword by itself does not slay, it is merely the weapon used by the slayer. Riches themselves do not harm you, just because it is on account of riches that you suffer harm. I think that the reasoning of Posidonius is better. He holds that riches are a cause of evil, not because of themselves they do any evil, but because they goad men on so that they are ready to do evil. For the efficient cause, which necessarily produces harm at once, is one thing, and the antecedent cause is another. It is this antecedent cause which inheres in riches. They puff up the spirit and beget pride. They bring on unpopularity and unsettle the mind to such an extent that the mere reputation of having wealth, though it is bound to harm us, nevertheless affords delight. All goods, however, ought properly to be free from blame. They are pure, they do not corrupt the spirit, and they do not tempt us. They do indeed uplift and broaden the spirit, but without puffing it up.